Word Radio on Demand, 96.1 FM and 900 AM WURD. Streaming live at wordradio.com.
My next guest, Dr. Nitin Verma, is a postdoctoral research scholar in the area of AI and society at ASU's School for the Future of Innovation in Society in collaboration with the New York Academy of Sciences. His overarching research interest is in studying the relationship between the human drive for creating technologies and how human technologies and societies co-shape each other. At the core of that work, he's interested in studying the mechanisms of interpersonal trust that make large communities cohere and how technologies such as deep learning infused AI influence those mechanisms of trust. Dr. Nitin Verma, welcome to Evening Words.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Sir, am I pronouncing your name correctly, first of all?
You're spot on. You're spot on.
Wow. Okay. That's fantastic. So I want to set the stage for you before we get into this interview. First of all, your research sounds fascinating. Mm-hmm. And you know, a couple of things have happened earlier on in the program. One, we looked at a headline from NBC News of a new report out that's looking at all the various ways that the Black community is being targeted with disinformation during this election cycle. As you well know, sir, AI is a part of that. And so my first question is that I know you've done research on AI video and on deep fakes, right? But these days they talk a lot more about cheap fakes, which I don't think always has an AI component to it. But can you talk a little bit about the role that artificial intelligence can play in disinforming communities and critical election cycles?
Okay, thank you for that introduction. So, you know, I think right off the bat, the first thing that I think of with AI and how the whole disinformation ecosystem gets like a shot in the arm is the ease with which you can essentially click one button once you have a system going, and you can just replicate and create multiple versions overnight if you have the compute power, for example. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, for some relatively low cost in terms of computation stuff like text, you can probably, you know, just create variants by the thousands and then have bots go out and interact with real humans on social media platforms. So AI is, you know, it's like a double-edged sword in that sense.
And your research, when you talk about how AI can influence the mechanisms of trust, can you break that down for us? I mean, what do you list under the mechanisms of trust? And then how is sophisticated artificial intelligence influencing those mechanisms of trust?
Right. That's a great question. So essentially, when you and I talk about trust, or in the colloquial sense, we use the word trust sort of interchangeably with, you know, can I rely on this person or do I believe this person? So it's like a cloudy concept in itself, but trust essentially needs you to be able to decide whether you want to believe that the other person will not cause you harm in a given interaction. So typically the question of trust arises when you have little information about someone, not no information, not everything that you need to know, but little information. And then based on that little information, you use other cues, maybe of, you know, having known that person through your extended network or having read some of their work. You take a risk, in a sense, of, you know, believing what they say or doing a transaction with them, accepting the risk and, you know, knowing that the risk can be mitigated because I have some information on this person. So AI in the broad sense, like very abstractly, is first of all, in combination with social networks, removing that, you know, the grease that powers our social interrelationships with each other. So in a way, there is that weakening of these social bonds. So there is less, even less information to be had in a weird way. But then I think where I see this link really breaking down is when you encounter media on social media or on the TV, for example, mm-hmm. or, you know, these days on TikTok or Instagram, mm-hmm. you do not necessarily know whether it comes from the person it purports to come from. Mm-hmm. So that is where, you know, the risk multiplies in, you know, whether you want to invest your knowledge, mm-hmm. Of whatever that source is informing you of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this is scary for me for a lot of reasons, because, you know, I'm in a traditional media format. I know this looks like a mm-hmm. podcast, but this is radio, and, mm-hmm. and I can see a lot of misinformation floating in and around the community. And so I'm curious about the video piece here. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering maybe you didn't explore this in your research, but it seems to me that even without deep fakes and without cheap fakes, video has become a more trusted or more reliable source of content consumption and information anyway, which is to say that even without AI technology, even without the sort of kind of editing of cheap fakes or the AI influence of deep fakes, video is still becoming more dominant as a mode of transmitting information because of social media, because of streaming services, because of all the ways in which visual content mm-hmm. has become more dominant. So how are we able to determine the ways in which AI deepfakes or the editing around cheapfakes is making that worse or not, if video was already becoming a more dominant form of content in terms of how we consume news and information?
That is a fascinating question. And I would say that the clock, you can wind the clock back a few millennia mm-hmm. to, you know, go back to why visual communication has been so appealing to us. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, that appeal and the trust, or you could say faith, you invest in visuals or pictures or representations, mm-hmm. it also heightens the reward for somebody who wants to deceive you through the visual medium.
Mm.
So, I mean, when it comes to video, let me just speak of, you know, the non-AI or even the non-technological means by which video can be used to both convey a narrative or amplify a certain true narrative mm-hmm. or amplify a certain false narrative. So it is simply, like, before you even think of AI or any other kind of technology, simply looking at, you know, where you want to be as a visual journalist, for example, or as somebody else wielding a camera, and what do you want to put in the frame? What voices do you want to record? And what kind of scene cuts do you want to make? Mm-hmm. So it is all those things that make video both like a fantastic Ken Burns style documentary making tool,
mm-hmm.
but also, you know, a very powerful tool for disseminating disinformation or hoaxes.
Mm.
And it goes back to the VHS era, or, you know, as I said, much, much, much further
mm-hmm.
back.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Verma, what are some of the craziest deepfakes that you have seen in your research, or the most compelling ones, or the scariest ones that you've seen in your research?
Yeah, I've seen so many that I've kind of become numb to the to the excitement that I felt the first time around I saw mm-hmm. some of the really good ones. But I think the one that stands out to me is this video series where this person, who's a trained actor,
mm-hmm.
simulates Tom Cruise. Okay. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Hanks was coming to my mind, but it is Tom Cruise.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, Tom Cruise, a series of deepfakes. They pulled the rug from under my feet.
Mm.
And the thing with those videos is that the actor who's, you know, actually standing in front of the camera mm-hmm. is a good mimic, first mm-hmm. of all, of Tom Cruise. Mm-hmm. But then, once that footage is fed into, you know, an algorithm with expert deepfake makers at it for a few minutes, then what you get is like an absolutely, at first glance, it is very difficult to tell that this is not Tom Cruise, for example.
Wow. Yeah. We got to get ready to let you go. But are there any tips or tools for like those of us who are not at the New York Academy of Sciences as a fellow and studying this deep research? Are there tips and tools for us to be more discerning in determining when we're seeing something that is not real in terms of video?
Mm-hmm. I can say two things. Like, one, for determining, honestly, it is a very difficult problem.
Mm-hmm.
So the first thing is look at the source from which the video is coming. Like, is mm-hmm. it published on, say, NBC or mm-hmm. even like any other established media outlet that you might ideologically disagree with even.
Mm-hmm.
But as long as it is one of the big networks, for example, or one of the established cable or streaming platforms,
mm-hmm.
that is something that you should pay attention to. And then try and inculcate certain video watching, I would say visual literacy skills, mm. where you pay attention to, you know, is there dramatic music in the background? Are there too many scene cuts? Is the actual speaker being more active part mm. of what is being presented on the screen, for example?
Mm-hmm.
And then secondly, especially in this era, I think one thing you can do is that if you see a video, especially a video that carries, you know, emotionally charged content,
mm-hmm.
Then have, I don't know how many, count till 10 perhaps, mm-hmm. or count till 20 and resist sharing it in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Like, look at the video, mm-hmm. and if it has alarming content, then just
mm.
do the things that I said about, you know, verifying the source, for
mm-hmm,
example,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and then just sit back and consider what the impact of, you know, sharing that video might be.
Mm.
Do you yourself believe that this is an authentic story that I just saw?
Mm.
And maybe compare notes with a friend, show mm-hmm. it to a trusted friend or mm-hmm. somebody else that you trust
mm-hmm.
and see if this is what it purports to be.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah.
Dr. Verma, I feel like we have so much more to learn from you. I hope you'll come back on as you continue your fellowship at the New York Academy of Sciences and doing this really, really important research on the impact of deepfake technology on trust and on the sort of literacy of our entire community, not just the folks here listening to Evening Words. So we appreciate your time and we hope we get a chance to learn from you more again in the future.
You've been listening to Word Radio On Demand. Listen live at 96.1 FM, 900 AM, and online at Word.
This is what my mother said.